Okay, I'm recording this now. Thankfully, I remembered that in the first 5 minutes. All right, so there's several things you can do to help improve customer service perception, right? And the number one thing, as far as I can tell, is just responding quickly. And for some people, quickly means within 24 hours. And I know I'm a bit, you know, hyper. But for me, I mean, 5 minutes, 10 minutes is really great during the business day. And I know that my clients, our clients, really appreciate the quick responsiveness that we try to do here. And so really think about that. Like, if it takes you several hours to respond to a client email during business hours, not on the weekends, but during business hours, you know, really think about maybe stepping that up a bit. And if you're at a job where you can't access your computer, maybe if you can get it on your phone, your email, or whatever, that's really, it will make a big difference in client satisfaction. All right, be enthusiastic. If you can't be enthusiastic, then don't take on the project. But, you know, it's kind of a downer when you have somebody that's kind of grumbling and that kind of thing, both as a client and as a writer. You know, I don't like to work with clients that aren't enthusiastic, and it's hard to work with writers that aren't enthusiastic, so try to cultivate that quality in yourself and be have a little levity about things, you know? A sense of humor really helps. Along the same vein, be low maintenance and easygoing to a point. I mean, there are a certain percentage of clients that will, you know, try to nickel and dime you to death, and those are clients maybe that you don't work with long term, right? But I think overall, it's a good idea just to be low maintenance, easygoing, and to a point, until you have to renegotiate the scope of the project or whatever it is. But you can still be nice about it. Do more than expected, and a couple of examples would be reordering the references and putting them in the exact style that's needed, or telling the client if they've made a mistake of some sort. When you send a project back, right, instead of just sending the project back, if there's something to make a note of in the email, like a nice couple of paragraphs about some of the things that the client would need to look through or look for, some comments or whatever, think about what would be helpful to them. So treat other people as you wish to be treated. And you do want to avoid doing more than is requested sometimes. If you're asked to do like a proofread of a slide set or something, then don't go and do a heavy edit or a format of the slide set. So do stick to the specifications, but do try to do more than is expected. Same thing, help out and do favors. You know, anytime you help anybody or help somebody out, it always comes back, and it's in more than you put out is even how it comes back. So that's nice. And that's true. It doesn't feel like it's going to be true sometimes, but it is true. All right, and then some things not to worry about. So there's some, in terms of writing and having a freelance writer relationship with a client, you know, if you do miss a deadline, it's best if you don't ever miss a deadline, but who doesn't have things come up sometimes? But just try to plan for them and make sure that you don't you know, really leave the client in the lurch if possible. Occasional grumpiness. I try never to be grumpy with my clients, but if I feel that I'm going to be grumpy with a client, then I'm probably not going to be working with them that much in the future if they really upset me, you know? So, but I don't really feel like, you know, unloading on a client and telling them that I'm never going to be working for them again, ever, because that kind of negativity, it feels good at the time, right? To tell somebody exactly what you're thinking or feeling, but it's best not to to do that. But then if they come back for more work from you, then better, you know, I'm sorry, I'm busy, I can't do that. Things not to worry about too. A lot of times projects get put on hold, and it can be frustrating, because especially if you've cleared your calendar and you've made space in your schedule to work on something, and then they say, oh, well, we need to wait a couple of weeks before we start on that. It's like, really? And then all of a sudden you have no work to replace the 2 weeks that you had budgeted for that and that kind of thing. Really try to be easygoing about that, because oftentimes it's not the client's fault. It's probably, you know, their client, like the pharma company's fault or something like that. A change in scope. I really try to accommodate changes in scope as much as possible. Because when you start going back to the client and say, well, you know, I had to write 500 more words for this, so I need to charge $300 more dollars. It, you know, if you do that several times on a project, it can be very jarring, and it makes you seem as if you're a bit difficult to work with. So there's a happy medium in that. Of course, you don't want to work for, you know, minimum hourly wage, but try to keep the scope increases and the demands for money, you know, within reason. A lot of things too, a lack of clarity from the client. I have a couple of wonderful clients, and they're wonderful people. You know, one of them's, I don't want to say any names, but one of them's local, and very nice lady, but I can't understand her emails to me, like what she wants me to do exactly. I mean, like, she takes like 3 emails to determine exactly what she wants to do in the project, and but is that a problem? I'm not going to get upset over that. I'm just going to accept that as that is. And but it is confusing when you first start out as a medical writer, because you don't know what you don't know. And so it's really helpful if the client just tells you, you know, everything that you do need to know. But once you get more experience after a couple of years, then you realize what the client isn't giving you the information the client isn't giving to you, and it becomes easier to deal with. But just try to let it all wash off of you if they're a bit, you know, flaky. And then contracts. Some people worry very much about contracts, and I've noticed a lot. Not always, but sometimes MDs, because it's such a litigious profession, when it comes to the things that they've dealt with in the past in their career with them, you know, with the lawsuits or whatever, and concerns about being sued and malpractice and all that. When it comes to going into medical writing, you bring that same level to you, and it's like, well, I don't know of any medical writers having been sued, and I, you know, obviously don't want to jinx myself, but contracts make me upset to read them, because they're usually very anti-writer. But there are some things you need to have striked out, however you say that. There are some things that you shouldn't have in a contract, but overall, I tend to be very easygoing with contracts, and I don't, you know, push back on every single, you know, like clause that doesn't sit well with me. I try to be easygoing, because again, that gets you to be a reputation of a bit of a difficult writer to deal with. Okay, and then handling deadline issues. So obviously, you try not to be late on your projects. You don't want to be late if you can help it. But it does depends on the project too. Like if it's a really big project, then a couple of days of being, or a day or so of being late, it's not ideal, but it can be, it's manageable. If it's like a news piece that's due in later that day, then it's best not to be late at all, especially with news, because that's pretty, you know, fast-paced. And then try to communicate beforehand that you're going to be late, and then the excuses, you know, maybe you have an explanation, but really it's kind of, anybody that's dealt with freelance writers has heard everything, all the excuses, so, you know, just know that, and just say, look, you know, I'll get this to you 10 a.m. tomorrow, apologies, and I hope that's not a problem, and just, like, you can leave out the excuse, you know, just let them know when you're going to give it to them, and then get it to them at that time. And then if you can't do a speedy revision, and that's if your work comes back and you have a revision, then because sometimes you might have another project or something, right? But if you can't do that, then there is a solution in terms of finding another writer, if you can do that, or I'm trying to think from a perspective of just a one-person shop, but if you can't do a speedy revision, then you know that's a challenge. But clients shouldn't expect you to drop everything for a revision either sometimes. So, all right, and then avoid doing the following. Ooh, we've got 20 people on. Look at that, that's cool. All right, avoid doing the following. Tell the client why you want, don't do this. Tell the client why you will never write for them again. You know, that's tempting sometimes, and I've got a couple of clients on the will never write for them again list, but they don't know it. So, but you just be busy and say you can't do that. Or another thing you can do is raise the price until it becomes worthwhile for you to write for that client, and then, you know, usually they'll go away if you raise the price, but they might surprise you and pay you. And if it's a client that they couldn't even pay you enough for you to work for them, then you know, just be careful about that. But it would be nice. Like, there are some clients that I would definitely work for if they, like, doubled what they paid. You know what I'm saying? All right, and then don't argue about specific comments made in your revisions. And it's okay to question some things, but so in academia, when you turn in a paper for peer review, you're supposed to counteract all the comments, or else, you know, address the comments but counteract them, and that's part of the peer review process, right? But when it comes to medical writing and comments on your paper, really just like make the change. Don't argue with it, and unless it's something just very inaccurate about it. But usually it's just a matter of just doing what they ask. Try not to get defensive with feedback. Feedback is a gift from the universe. Doesn't feel like it. We all get feedback, right? But best not to be defensive about it. They could be wrong, so why waste your time on it? But it's notoriously difficult to give negative feedback to writers, especially newer writers, because they're very nervous about it and everything. And if you give any feedback, it can be challenging. So just, and there's some people that aren't very nice when they give feedback, and of course you want to come back at them. But just whatever feedback you get, know that it's a learning experience. All right. Ask questions. Don't ask questions that you can get answered elsewhere. Big one. Don't be too pushy about, oh, when is this being published? Where is it being published? Blah, blah, blah. That kind of thing. Don't lower your price or write for free, and then don't accept any form of abuse, obviously. All right. Questions, comments, and can you add anything? And if you do have any of these, then please do type a little thing in the text box. And I am going to try to, hopefully, Aaron's on the call. Aaron, can you type your area code into the text box if you're on the call? Here we go. Oh, we've got 5 messages up here. Okay. So Carolyn is asking, do writers ever negotiate deadlines? Yes. Yes, all the time. Especially before the project started. You want to make sure that you can complete a deadline, ideally. But and you know, when I was working as a one-person shop, I mean, I would take on so much work, and it would kind of be a bit of my downfall of occasionally, more often than I like, missing deadlines, right? So you have to do kind of deadline triage sometimes with clients, and you have a sense usually of if something's due that day, or if it's okay if there's a little wiggle room, maybe a couple of days. So you have to figure that out for each client and then adjust accordingly. But try to obviously not overschedule yourself. It's totally fine. I'm trying to see if Aaron is on the call. Aaron, are you on the call? Can you type in the chat box? I'm not seeing her. And then, let's see, we have another question from Caroline. Let's see. What is the paradigm regarding payment? Do clients ever pay half up front and half at the end of the project? Yes. And I usually recommend, like, if a project's going to be over $3,000 or $5,000, something in that area, then I would need like a third or a half up front, especially if it's a brand new client. That's important. If it's a client that's been with us a while, then maybe I'll ask for half on delivery of the first draft and then half at the end of the project. You know what? I bet Aaron is in the previous time zone. Let's see. Sorry about this. I know everybody's just hanging out watching me look at my phone here. She might be, I think she's an hour back. So she might think it's 3 p.m. Hold on a second, okay. All right. Oh, 317. Okay. All right, you're on here. You know the difference between Eastern and Central Time, right? Where are you? Let me just here we go. All right, I'm going to unmute you, Aaron. I'm just going to, first of all, I'm going to unmute you. There we go. Aaron? Hello?
Hi, Emma.
Hey, Aaron, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. So first of all, I'm just going to answer Caroline's question. Oh, that's fine. You're not hugging the call. What if a client suddenly cancels a project that you've started on? See, that's one of the times when you have to kind of have a sense of humor. And it depends a lot, too. If you've done a lot of work, then I think it's perfectly acceptable to ask for a kill fee, depending on if it's like, if they're canceling a project a day before it's due, that's, you know, obviously you've been working on it. So I would negotiate some kind of kill fee. That doesn't happen too often, though. It's more often that they'll postpone a project like a week or two. So, all right. So if you have any other questions, though, type it in the text box. That's great. So I'm going to talk to Aaron, Dr. Aaron Burns. And Aaron came through the April 11th, 2016 6-week course. And she's got an MS in biology, biotechnology, a PhD in integrated biomedical sciences. That sounds cool, like a little bit of everything. And then we've got, she's also just completed a master's in public health, I think, in applied epidemiology. So very strong science background. So welcome to the call, Aaron. Thank you. Appreciate you joining me. Yeah, so, and let me just also tell you about Aaron. So we've got really amazing subcontractors working for Nascent, but I would say Aaron has just, since April 11th, has just always been so responsive with all the projects that have gone out and has taken on work and has done a great job with everything that she's done. And I'm sure there's been projects that she hasn't had much experience with, but she's taken them on anyway and has done a great job. So because of that, she's done really well and she's gotten a lot of work. And I just want to know what her philosophy on freelancing is. I'm interested to talk to her. So Erin, if you could tell me a little bit about your background and why you signed up for the course.
Yeah, so I was on the typical try to become a professor academic track. But it was actually during my postdoc that our university did this experiences program where they basically were acknowledging that not everyone is going to be able to become a professor and to try on all these different other career options. And I've always sort of been interested in writing and editing. I did a lot of that, obviously, through graduate school, but I was also asked to edit things for my bosses and other colleagues, and I really enjoyed it. So after seeing sort of some not-so-great sides of academia and thinking about these other options, I went to their events on science communication. Uh-huh. And through that, I actually met Dr. Aaron Thacker, who has also been through the 6-week course.
Yeah.
And she highly recommended your course, Emma, basically said that if this is something that I'm really thinking about doing, that I should sign up for your course, and I will learn everything I need to know.
Thank you. I have to pay her later.
Yeah, so I took her advice and signed up, and I mean, I think that it was everything that I expected it to be and more. I really learned a lot and got a better idea for the things that I would have to do to become a freelance medical writer. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of how things happened.
Yeah, so it sounds as though you've got all the science background, but you didn't have much. You did a little bit of writing things in graduate school, but you didn't really have like a degree in English or anything like that. Did you do any beefing up of your writing skills and knowledge?
Not really. I mean, this was forever ago, but I was on yearbook staff when I was in high school.
Okay.
So that sort of gave me sort of that experience. But English and writing has always just come pretty easily to me, and it's been something that I liked, and I read a lot.
Oh, that helps, yeah.
Yeah,
I've noticed that.
I think I'm just sort of lucky there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've noticed people that say that they read a lot tend to do well in the writing thing. It's mm-hmm. I don't know, it must be correlated. So do you have any kind of strategies in the back of your mind? I know my experience in working with you is that you seem to be always online during the working day. Is that, mm-hmm. like, do you make a conscious effort to do that, or what is that?
Yeah, I basically, so since I was used to working pretty much 7 to 5 or whatever anyway, mm-hmm. That's pretty much the schedule that I try to keep to, since that's when most people are trying to look for business, or when I'm trying to look for business, I guess.
Yeah.
But I did make an alert sound for my email that
that's good.
I give out to people.
Yeah.
So that has helped me mm-hmm. not miss things.
Mm-hmm.
So I just try to be around my computer or able to hear the alert pretty much throughout the day.
Okay, well, that's good. And because I know the work that we've given you is quite a bit. Sometimes I've been concerned, like, you know, I hope you can juggle it all and you do meet all your deadlines. So I'm wondering if you have had an experience where it's been challenging to meet your deadlines, you know, that kind of thing. Have you had a hard time juggling any of your deadlines, or...?
I think for the most part it's been pretty easy for me, because I keep a pretty detailed schedule for myself.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes, like when different clients have wanted revisions on things,
right.
That were a bit more extensive than I was hoping for,
yeah.
That can sort of put a wrench in things a little bit. But so far, it's been manageable. So.
I think I know what project you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, great. So, let's see. We've got about 20 people on the call, most of them in the current 6-week course, and everybody, of course, has different backgrounds and stuff, but what advice do you have for people going through the 6-week course and then, like, as, you know, going out after that and getting clients and this, that, other things?
Yeah. So I would definitely take advantage of submitting samples and having them reviewed for free, basically. Because, I mean, like you said earlier, it's not always the easiest to get feedback about your writing if it's not as great as you thought it was. But this is your time to learn, so
right.
Use that. And then also, if you are lucky enough to become a subcontractor, try to respond to every project that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
I know it took me several tries before I actually started getting things.
Yeah.
And that can just be based on timing of when you add it, like when you responded. But also, like, I was hesitant at first to reply for some of the projects because I was like, well, I don't really know how to write this. I've never written this before. And then I told myself, if you want to learn, you just have to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I really started responding to just everything.
Yes.
And it's turned out really well, and I've learned a lot. So.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yes, you've got to sort of have a confidence in yourself. And so if you haven't written a needs assessment before and you accept the project, then all of a sudden it's terrifying, obviously, because you've never done it or whatever, and you're worried about it. Like, that you've just to learn, you have to do. That's the only way to do it. So I totally agree with what you're saying, is like really try to take on everything. And you know, it is, part of me hates how competitive it is to get all the projects that go out from NASEN. I mean, there's other clients and all, you can do all that. But as far as getting work from us, I mean, it's mostly first come, first serve, and a lot of factors, like if we're confident in someone's writing and if somebody's a very good fit because of their background, there's a lot of different factors. So it's not exactly first come, first serve, but the more you do offer to do something, you know, if somebody offers like 3 times in a row for a project and they don't get that part, get a project, then, you know, 4th time around, I'm going to be like finding a way to try to give them that project, give them a project. So It's just a matter of being persistent. And then also sometimes, you know, there's like this crazy deadline and it's, you know, it's a needs assessment that they need in 3 days, and I'll put it out to like, you know, 30, 50 people and nobody responds, right? And so that's when it gets put out again, and maybe to even more people that maybe we haven't been in touch with for a while, or, you know, and so if it seems like if you've been on the subcontractor list and you haven't heard from us for a while, and then something comes along, if it means, you know, if you care at all, I don't know, you might not want to write for NASEN, I don't know, but like, if you want to, then go ahead and take that, you know, try to take that project, because it means that we're having a hard time finding a writer or whatever. It means that it's just good to take projects when you can. You try to fit them in if you want to do that. And then, of course, go out and get other clients other than us, too. It's always a good thing, because you don't want to just rely on us. All right. Well, Erin, thank you so much. I really appreciate you talking with me, and thanks for all the work that you've done, and excellent work. And I appreciate it. So,
it's my pleasure.
Yeah,
thank you.
I'm going to mute you. And let's see here. There we go. Sorry. Okay. All right, great. So we just have a couple of other questions. If you do have any questions, please do put it in the little text box. And I'm going to move this over here so I can see. All right. Sorry, I'm just reading the text box here. Yes, okay, and Caroline also asked, great question, are emails enough of a contract regarding payment? Yes, if it's in writing, then it's considered, and email's great that way, then it's considered good enough. Usually, bigger clients want to put in a, you know, like a statement of work or something like that, but you can put all that in an email and it's legal. So Golna says, this may be wishful thinking on my part, but if you complete a project ahead of time, do you submit it to the client or wait till the date agreed upon? Oh, that's a very good question. I think it's fine to submit it early. I think that's totally fine, as long as you feel like you did a good job and you didn't kind of cut corners on it or anything. Yeah, I think it's totally fine to submit something early. In fact, I love it when subcontractors turn in stuff early and then I can turn it on to the client early. That kind of makes us look really good. They like that. Trisha says, when you took on the projects that were new types of writing to you, from whom did you get your feedback or guidance? NASEN or the client directly? Let's see. Do you mean when I took on projects that were new? When writers take on. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, so when writers take on projects for Nascent, yeah, so really they need to go kind of through me or whoever's managing the project, usually me at this point, but yeah, if you have any questions about it, then you would ask me, not the client, definitely. I hope that answered your question. All right, cool. Anything else? Trying to think if there's any other questions that you might have. But, and as Aaron said, I'll answer that, Katie. So as Aaron said, Aaron did a good job in the course with her news pieces and samples, but she's one of many in the course, and I think she's, like she said, she tried many times before I was going to give her, a needs assessment. Things went out to her, or to the subcontractors, and she responded, and there was always somebody more experienced that would be available, so we're like, I don't know if I want to risk it, and then she kept persisting, and got her first needs assessment, and then she did a good job on that, I was able to trust her with more work. So Katie's asking, what's the best way to get hired as a subcontractor? Well, and this seems excessive, and I'm sorry, but I'm just kind of, I'm an excessive person, but it's, the 6-week course asks you to write 3 news pieces, but you can write 5 or 10, right? You can do that, and then you can also write a needs assessment and do all that before the end of the 6 weeks. It's best if you can get all these things in during the 6-week course so we can look at them before the end of the 6-week course. And especially if somebody's put in a lot of effort to do that and also has done well in the writing, the writing's good, that kind of thing, then definitely you'll at least get onto the list, put it that way. I hate that it's so competitive, but it just is what it is because it's, clients want a certain level of quality. Right, so we have to be selective about all that. It's totally possible to get if you're within the range, and if you're in the course, you're most likely going to be okay to go forward, and the writing level is already there. So hopefully, it's going to work out. If that makes sense. How many subcontractors do you typically send one project to? That's a very good question. So there's, it depends a lot on the project, right? So if I think something is going to be difficult to assign, so for instance, it's, it's not that well paying, the client's not paying us that much, and it's a very short deadline. For instance, a needs assessment over a holiday weekend, which I think we had that a couple of months ago, is this client assigned a project on Friday and they needed something back Tuesday after a holiday weekend. So I know that I'm going to be sending out that project out to 30, 40 something people, right? But if it's something that's highly attractive, that is, or if it's a really specialized kind of thing, like a sales training module that requires annotation and referencing and detail-oriented things, then I'm going to send that probably to maybe 5 or 10 people that I know I've seen that before. I know that they can do that because I can't assign something like a sales training module that pays $4,000 that requires a lot of detail-oriented annotation. I can't send that out to somebody that I've never seen do that kind of thing before. However, if that person has written 3 needs assessments and has done really well and it seems to be detail-oriented that way, then okay, well maybe we can trust them. All right. So I know I'm giving you a really long-winded answer, but the number it goes to would be anywhere from 5, and it can be up to, I've sent it up to, 60 to 80 people before. And believe it or not, I've sent out projects to 80 people and I've had one response. And when that one response comes in, that's been a heartfelt thank you. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's usually a project that's very difficult to assign. So, all right. Hope all this is making sense. Any other questions? Alrighty. Well, unfortunately, I don't have the screen recording, but I have the audio recording. And I'll put that up at sixweekcourse.com/weeklycalls, and you can listen to it. And what's the subject next week? I'm not sure what it is. I had to have to pull that out. I'm not sure what the call is next week, but I hope you'll join me. All right, have a good week. Thank you. Thanks.